6 inches thick.
He picked his teeth with a swagger stick.
He picked his teeth with a swagger stick.
A drinking and a fighting and a running all day.
Drinking and a fighting and a running all day.
My granddaddy knew no other way.
Welcome back to Dr. Drill's Making Motivation podcast, where it is our absolute mission to honor the most interesting and authentic people, to tell their stories, put smiles on faces, and a little bit of fire under the asses of the masses. My friends, you got a real treat today. I've got my buddy Joe McCarthy. He's a Marine from way back when. We're just having a little conversation. Joe's going to explain that he served between Korea and Vietnam. And so he's got some great stories to tell. He just came coming back from a great veterans outreach. What was that called, Joe?
Heroes Walk.
The Heroes Walk. And this is a really awesome opportunity. He wrote him a little letter for mail call. Did he write that? Did you read that?
Yeah.
This is great, man. So we're going to talk about, he's just back from the Heroes Walk. There we go. Heartfelt thanks to our great friend Joe McCarthy for his honorable service, the United States Marine Corps. Semper Fi, hard dick. Dr. O and Emily here from Healthy Balance Chiropractic. Did they read those to you, or you just got them on the...
They gave them back. They're from school kids.
Oh.
And these are from family members.
Awesome. We'll read all these, man. We're going to do a little mail call right now, a little spontaneity. So, here we've got, we thank you for your dedication, St. Dominic, pre-K. Thank you for your service. You want to read one of those there? Or?
This one's rather lengthy. It's from my son.
Awesome. Dear Dad, I want you to know how grateful I am to you and to all veterans for the sacrifice and service you have gladly given, and I want you to know that I have always been especially proud of your service as a Marine. May you always feel that. My thanks and love. That's awesome.
From Nancy.
This is from Joe's lovely wife, Nancy. I'm sure you've had a really memorable time today. I miss you today. I didn't know you in your youth when the Marines saw you had what it takes to be a Marine. Guts, testosterone, vinegar, whatever. I know once a Marine, always a Marine. You are an honorable man, always there to help out and fix problems. That's why I love you, Nancy. We got to get her on the podcast, Joe. She's something special, yeah. That one. This is from Levittown, Pennsylvania, from Cameron. Who's Cameron?
Just a school kid.
Okay. Yeah. So she says, dear veteran, my name is Cameron Daugherty, and I'm 13 years old. Three of my favorite things to do are listening to music, doing art like painting and drawing. I also love to bake cakes and many other things. I enjoy being an American because of all the holidays we have, like Christmas and Thanksgiving. I also love traditions. Families celebrate soldiers, help us obtain these by fighting for us so we can do all these things. Thank you so much for all of you have done for us. I'm grateful for you protecting our friends and families. Shane, also from 11 years old from Pennsylvania. I like to play video games. My favorite thing about living in the USA is that there's a lot of cool art, memorials and museums to see. Thank you for helping this country become a free and safe place to live. I think you are a really awesome person. And on and on and on. So really, really nice. The Heroes Walk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was fantastic. That was really a moving, moving experience. We went down, it was sponsored by Parks Casino.
Right.
So we went to there at 4:30 in the morning or 0400. We started out from there. They gave us a very nice shirt, a hat, and a jacket for us to wear during the day so that we could be recognized, you know, by But it was good. That was one of the most moving moments that I've had in a long time. If you ever get the chance, it's worth it. I mean, it's great. But how I came to go to the Marine Corps was probably 100% by accident. But I was in an orphanage, and one of the other fellows who was 17, he wanted to join the Army, and he talked me into it. So I forged my sister's signature to a paper, and we went down to what used to be Gray's Ferry Arsenal in West Philly.
Okay.
We went down there, and they gave us a meal while they were indoctrinating us. And then finally, they were getting ready to ship out, and the sergeant called me out, and he said, "You can't go. You're underage." And I argued with him that I wasn't. And he said, "Your signature on this page proves that, you know." So I didn't fight him any longer. I left. Yeah. So went back. At that time, I was hanging on the corner of Broad and Allegheny. And I went back and to the corner, and there was two guys, Joe Brennan and Jake McGrattan, were standing there, and they said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Nothing. I just tried to join the Army." And they said, "Well, come with us. We're going to go down and join the Marines. We're going to." They said that we just went up to Broad and Erie, and a recruiter up there said the quota was filled. But you could go down and join the reserves.
Right.
So I said, I got nothing better to do today. So I thought, yeah, I'll go down with you. So we went down to the Navy Yard, and they didn't care, or they didn't think it was that important about my age. But anyway, they they took us in, and I joined the Marines. At that time, it was the Marines Reserve. 2 weeks in the summer, 1 week and a month, duty. So for they must have known that I was underage, but they didn't want to lose me. Why, I don't know. But so they kept me around, and on the weekends they sent me over to Fort Dix.
Okay.
And they were, the rest of the platoon was going over there for training. And I went over there, and they said, "Well, go catch a movie or do something." And so I went to the movie. I went to the PX. I went, you know, all the places around that I had never been on a military base. And the weekend I came back, and that went on for a couple of months. And then one weekend when I went down for weekend duty, they said, "Well, we need people to go for basic training down at Paris Island." So I said, "Yeah, sure, hell, why not?" So I went down to Paris Island, and by this time I turned 17. So I went down to Paris Island, graduated Paris Island, and it was a lot of discipline, a lot of regiment. But I was used to that because in the orphanage, we got up at the same time, we went to bed, we ate same time, we showered and everything. Yeah, with the other guys, it was all, you know,
by the numbers, yeah, sort of stuff.
Yeah, so. When I went into service, I mean, I remember in boot camp hearing guys crying at night, the first night. And I said to somebody, "What the hell are they crying about?" And so they'd never been away from home. They never, you know, had to get undressed in front of, you know. I said, "Didn't they have gym where they went to school?" But they toughened up, and the crying only lasted a couple of nights. After that, they were fine, I think. Yeah. So, but the basic training was very good, very hard. I didn't appreciate it at the time.
Right.
I
mean, sucked,
right? I was a snot-nosed, you know, 16, 17-year-old kid and living on my own at that time, and nobody was going to tell me what to do. And I learned a lesson.
They
obedience.
Say, they did tell you what to do, huh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I did it.
How long was it? Not to cut you off. How long was it, recruit training? Because I know it's 13 weeks now, and when I went through 30 years ago, but was it that long then?
Oh, I think it was longer then.
Okay.
I mean, I remember, well, I'll tell you what, I joined in September. I was 16. It was in September. I turned 17 in October. The end of October, I was in Paris Island, and I was there for October, November, and December. And November. Yeah. So, I mean, it was at least 2 months, better part of 2 months training. I mean, I have some good memories of it and some bad. The worst thing was the graduation final field march.
Like final drill, final drill, they call that.
Yeah,
They did when I was in anyway.
Well, it was a weekend, like a survival course. And they said took us down to a place called Onslow Beach.
Yeah, I'm familiar, yeah. That's Lejeune.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's where they took us for this forced march. And they made us sleep on Onslow Beach. And they said, well, you know, dig a hole and put your tent up. Well, I never cursed the sunny South so much as trying to dig into a frozen beach.
Oh, no.
I mean,
with an e-tool, you had your little
and
trenching.
It was, you know, December. Yeah, a little tool, trenching tool, and that was it, you know. But I also, during that forced march, the two guys that I went down with, Jake McGrattan and Joe Brennan, I didn't see much of Joe Brennan during the whole basic training. Jake McGrattan I did because of the McCarthy and McGrattan, you know.
Right.
They all lined them up that way. But and during that forced march, we had backpacks on and all of our gear and everything. And Jake had put his backpack on incorrectly, and it was cutting under his arm, his arm was going limp. It was going dead.
Oof.
So I took his backpack, and I carried his backpack for the forced march. And that learned, you know, you help people out, and that was it. So,
yeah, you need to, man. You got your lives could rely, but you know, could depend upon one another, right?
Yeah. So then we went at graduation. The DI said, "Of these guys, they were from all over the country, these guys. Who wants to join the regular Marines?" And I think everybody took a step back, and I nudged Jake. I said, "Come on, let's go." He said, I had enough of this. So I raised my hand as I do. So I think there was one other guy, and we integrated into the regular Marines. And after my tour of service, I happened to be in the Navy Yard when I got discharged, and they gave me money for getting out. At that time, I think it was something like 6 cents a mile from the place you enlisted to the place you got
travel
discharged.
Travel expenses, yeah.
So I figured they'd give me a token and I'd get on the subway and go home. And they gave me money. And I said, oh, I forget how much it was, but I said, you know, I don't want to owe the government anything. You know, I said, I don't want this money. And the guy said, well, you're entitled to it because you get 6 cents a mile from the point of enlistment to the point of discharge. He said, you enlisted in Paris Island. He said, so we pay you 6 cents a mile. Yeah, I said, oh, I'm not going back to Paris Island.
But I'll take it anyway.
Yeah,
I'll
so, take that money anyway. If it was coming to me, I took it. So, yeah. The other guy to raise his hand, his name was Joe Klein. And how stupid I was. We get on the subway to go home, and he said, what are you going to do with your money? I said, well, I think I'm going to go. I don't want to wear these Marine Corps uniform anymore. I said, I'm going to go buy me down the South Street and buy me a suit. I said, I'll go down there because I can go down there and jute them down pretty good, you know. And he said, what? I said, down the South Street, you can jute them down pretty good. He said, what? And then it dawned on me, he was Jewish. And I said, well, you can get a good bargain down there. So, I mean, he never held it against me, but that was an enlightening moment, you know.
Different people, yeah. You're going to be around different folks, yeah.
Yeah.
What was, that was one of the things that I often think about and talk to my, fellow Marines about and veterans and stuff is that the melting pot.
Yeah. Now
everybody is thrust, all these different people are thrust into the same experience, and it's great. I mean, you probably had that as well in the orphanage.
Yeah.
But not a lot of people did. If somebody grew up in suburbia somewhere, they never been around, you know, inner city kids or anything like that, or country bumpkins, you know, I love that, that everybody has to come together and to fulfill this mission and have to rely upon one another.
Yeah, and you know, boot camp training, but it was good. It was, like I said, it was extensive. It was very, you know, but I always thought that physical activity, we always did calisthenics in the home and always, you know, played sports. And so I was pretty active anyway. But when we graduated, there was a black fella, Melvin Turner. And he was from around 15th and Susquehanna. And we became good friends. And so when we were leaving, we went over to take the train home. We had to take the bus over to Rocky Mountain, North Carolina. Familiar. And get the train there back to Philly. So I went over and I got my ticket. And then Melvin went over to get his. And the guy said, what do you want, boy? And he said, the ticket to Philadelphia. He said, on the other side, your tickets are on the other side. And this was in 1957, and it was still segregation down south, a lot of it. And they had terrible signs all over the place. But then I looked, and there was a water fountain, and it said whites, and then there was another one that said colored. And so he had to go around and get a ticket from a colored station, and I started arguing with the guy. You know, he's old enough to die for his country, and you got to tell him he has to go. He said, yeah. So when we got on the train, it was the same deal. They had to take the last car. And so
57, you said?
Yeah. So I was in the like further up, maybe three or four cars up. And I was there, and it wasn't until we were well into Virginia, almost into Delaware, when he came into the car. And just as you got further north, they were allowed to move further up in the car.
Wow.
So
even that short of a time ago.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, it's a long time, but it's still.
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah.
You know, that's.
Yeah. So, I mean, if he was willing to stand up and die beside me, then he should be able to ride beside me.
So. Oh, hell yeah. Agreed. Much agreed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're in the Corps. So you served in, you said regular Marine Corps, but you're in a recon unit, right?
My first duty station, I was at the Camp Geiger.
Mm-hmm.
Advanced training. And then after that, they didn't know where to send me. So they assigned me to guard the ammo dump.
Okay.
And at that time I qualified for the 45 and 12 gauge shotgun, because that's what they use around the ammo dump, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was good. Then after a month or two, they sent me out to Camp Geiger out at Stone Bay, the rifle range out at Camp Lejeune's rifle range and Stone Bay. So I was out there, and the first day I got there, I went in the barracks looking for somebody to tell me what to do, where to go, and everybody was pissed off, and they were sad, and, you know, and I finally asked the guy, I said, what the hell's going on? You know? He said, well, we just lost a guy. He said he was a mechanic down at the motor pool. But the gunny said that today everybody was going to take boat training. And what the boat training was 12 guys would get in a rubber raft and go down the river. And then at a certain point, they would turn the craft over.
Mm-hmm.
And then you pulled alongside and you counted off the numbers. And then you rated the craft up again. You get back in it, went down further, and you did the same thing. Well, this guy told them repeatedly that he didn't know how to swim. And they didn't care. You're going out for boat training. Well, they lost him. It took them 2 days to find his body down the river. So that was a bad introduction into second recon. And for a time, they put me in the H&S company, headquarters and supply.
Right.
And I was in there for a while. And then I got transferred to Chali Company, which was more than 50% black. And these were guys that I could relate to because of being around them, you know, in a home and everything. But you had to keep an eye on them. These guys were, anyway, I had a nice pistol, and I had requisitioned a holster from my buddy in supply. So it was a nice sidearm. And
45?
No, it was a 38.
Okay.
It was good. But anyway, it was stolen from me. But it was stolen on my last day there. I was being transferred to 10th Marines, Howitzer Battalion. So the day that I was packing up and looking, my gun was gone, and it wasn't a big deal. So, but I knew who took it. But so then I wound up going over to Mainside, Camp Lejeune, and which was 20 miles away from where we were, and I wound up in the Howitzer Battalion, and in the 10th Marines, A110. I didn't like that.
Why not?
Because they assigned me to cleaning the guns and lifting the shells all day long. And that was just like, you know, lifting weights, just, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what these guys did on their off time. They lifted weights and, you know, kept in shape. But the reason why I resented it was because when I was in recon, I was going to get married, and we had made plans, my wife and I in Philadelphia, we made plans, and she sent out invitations. My father-in-law got a hall, got a caterer, got everything. Invitations were out, and they transferred me to the A110. So I got in there, and I wanted to see the first sergeant, and I went in and explained to him the situation. He said, oh, well, let me talk to the CO and see if I can get you. So I waited like about 2 days, and I went back to him, and he said, what are you talking about? And I said, I told you, and I explained it all to him again. He said, we're shipping out a ship. We're going to the Mediterranean cruise. He said, and we need everybody. And I said, I got these invitations out. My wife, you know, I can't stand her up at the altar. He said, well, you have to. He said, that's, you know, that's all. I said, okay. So I went back to my locker, packed my civilian clothes, called my buddy over at Recon. He came over, picked me up in a car, and we went to Philly, and I got married. I went AWOL.
How'd that go?
Well, it landed me my second time in a brig. And it was the brig in Philadelphia, which wasn't a pleasant thing. But then I got court-martialed, and I had one French lieutenant on the board, and he persuaded the rest of them that the call of love was higher than the call of duty, as far as I was, my situation was.
Sure.
So instead of getting a BCD, bad conduct discharge, I got a discharge, honorable discharge, and I spent the rest of my time at the Philadelphia Navy Yard. It was a bad experience. I mean, that brig, I got knocked out a few times.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I probably was a smart-ass kid long after I got out of the service, but I just had that chip on my shoulder, and it didn't matter. I mean, so I remember one time coming back from a run. We had a run. We always had to do exercise. Coming back from a run, and I knew this guy was gunning for me, and he just came up alongside me, and he hit me once, and I went down, and that was it. And I was probably out for a few seconds or maybe a minute, but when a DI came over and asked me what the hell I was doing laying on the ground, you know, I said, oh, I fell. You know, he said, you fell? I said, yeah, I fell. I tripped and I fell. And he said, all right. So, I mean, and I knew you don't rat on anybody.
Right, right, right.
So but that was an experience. So, I mean.
That was in Philly?
Yeah, Philly Navy. Philly Navy Brig. Or... Yeah, the Philly Brig.
And that, so they'd still, you'd still train, you'd still PT and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah. It was more punishment than anything else. I mean, they made you do ridiculous stuff. That was.
What was the other time in the brig?
The other time in the brig was down in Camp Lejeune. And I always had a habit of coming back late. I'd go out on liberty. I had to be back by 0800. I'd come in at 9. It was just where I come in at 8:10. It didn't matter. You know, it was just you're late.
Right.
And I wound up having extra duty for 2 weeks. I'd have a midnight watch. Hut fire watch, for two weeks, have KP for 2 weeks. But after the 2 weeks were up, I'd go back out and go into Jacksonville, go into Moorhead City and whatever, and come back drunk and late. Didn't make any difference. I mean, I had my fun and that was it.
Right, right.
I'll pay for it, but so
that's part of the Marine Corps experience, right? You're young.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That's what maybe what Nancy was trying to articulate there. Full of vinegar and piss and vinegar.
Yeah.
That's part of the warrior ethos, you know, you work hard, play hard and all that stuff.
Yeah. When I got out of when we were out of boot camp and we went to before we went to Camp Geiger, we were allowed to go home. So, but before we went home, we went into Jacksonville for Liberty. And I got a tattoo on my arm, just has my name, Joe, but it's just a small little tattoo.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like four or five of us. And this guy, Al Klein, he got one and he got Al. So we went home for Liberty. like bat, I think it was like that time. It was maybe 20 days liberty after boot camp, 15, 20 days. But we went home, and then afterwards we came back. We went to Camp Geiger together, and I looked at Al's tattoo, and it was all white. And I said, Al, what happened to your tattoo? You know, get infected? And no. He said, when I was home, he said, I had to wear a Band-Aid over it. He said, my father is very Jewish, and they told me, you know, if you get a tattoo, you can't be buried in a Jewish cemetery. Mm. He said, so I didn't want to disappoint my father. I said, well, one day he's going to see it. He's going to know. He said, well, I'll have to face it then. But here's this big strapping Marine hiding a tattoo from his father. But he did. And that's, you know, that was part of life. I didn't have to worry about, you know, somebody telling me about my tattoo. So,
yeah, that was, it's always a big part of the culture. You know, I got a tattoo 15 years after the fact, after I got out, maybe 20, I got a little Eagle Globe and Anchor. Your thing about you have any motivator tattoos? You have like a...
No, that's the only tattoo I have. And that I got in 1957, and it cost me $2. And everybody gets a kick out of that now. $2? I said, yeah, $2 in 1957, Jacksonville, North Carolina. But that was... Jacksonville was a fun place. It was a bar, a pawn shop, tattoo parlor, pawn shop, a bar, tattoo parlor,
yeah.
A whorehouse.
It's much the same as today, yeah. I'm sure. It was in my day 30 years ago, so I'm sure it's the very same.
But no, my buddy went back down. He went down there and visit. He said, you wouldn't believe it. He said it's a suburban town now, and he said it's all built up, everything. They got rid of, you know, all the bars and tattoo parlors and all. He said there's one or two, he said, but
not quite
for the most part, they're all gone, yeah.
There was, trying to think of the some Jacksonville isms there. Yeah, in my time, it was very much the same. Any sort of business that can cater to young military personnel, if it's a bar, if it's a tattoo parlor, a surplus store, a topless bar, and on and on. Oh, Court Street was a place where, well, back in my day, it was like that was a place that they'd say, oh, let me catch you guys down in Court Street, because that was where the hookers were and the trouble was and fights and all that stuff. And they're like, don't go there, it's off limits. And then that's where everybody went. That's where you'd see everybody after hours.
And it was still, you had to be 18 to drink.
Okay.
And I met this guy in boot camp, Jerry Devlin. He was from Boston, a Southie. And he was, had to be 6 foot tall. And I was, you know, 5'8", 5'10", and 5'8", not 5'10". And so we were going to go in town, go to a bar. And I said, I can't get in there, because he said, come with me. And because he was so tall, I stood behind him, and he had to show your Liberty Pass and your ID. So he would show it. And then he'd pretend to be putting it in his back pocket. And I was standing close enough to him. I'd take it out of his hand. And then I'd fumble around. And the guy said, oh, you guys are brothers. You know? I said, yeah, yeah. He said, oh, Mutt and Jeff, huh? Yeah, yeah. But that's how I got into bars with him.
Yeah. So you said Vieques. You were stationed at Vieques?
Yeah, Vieques, yeah. We... when Castro was taken over in 59, they put us on a submarine, and then we got transferred to a ship, USS Randolph, and wound up having the guard cars that had the staff cars were down in the hull of the ship. And I thought, who the hell's going to steal these? You know, you're out at sea. But that's what I had. But then we got down there to the island, and we were, you know, going to be back up for whatever was going on. And as we got on the island, we were there maybe 3 or 4 days, and a hurricane came. Well, luckily for us, they had this a cave built. I mean, they made this underground where they could put all the trucks and jeeps and personnel down there. And they didn't care about the natives. It was just us, you know. So we went down, and after the hurricane was over, we came back up and tried to, you know, put things back together again. I had another experience with the hurricane was when I first got to Recon. I was in the H&S company, and I was down at the motor pool. So a hurricane was coming. I think it was Hurricane Ethel, something like that. And Sergeant told me, he said, you got to go down and put all those vehicles in the Quonset hut, you know, so they don't get damaged in the hurricane. All right, Sarge. So jumped in this one Jeep and drive it around and go into the Quonset hut to store it for the hurricane. And here the Jeep was in there because it had no brakes.
Oh, geez.
So I went through the Quonset hut wall, and it's steel metal. And so it flipped up. So I thought, well, can't blame that on a hurricane. I mean, so I took the Jeep, and knowing that it had no brakes, I took another 3/4-inch truck and had the big wheel on the back, spare wheel on the back. So I went around to the back of the Quonset hut, and I backed this truck up against the wall, banging into it. So it did push it back in, but it was all curved and all. And then after the hurricane, they went around inspecting the damage. And Sergeant said to me, "The hurricane do that?" I said, "It must have done. Nothing else in there. You know, everything else was secured." All right, so they marked it down as the hurricane did it. You know.
Oh, geez, thank goodness.
Yeah.
Joe, what does Semper Fidelis mean to you?
More so today than ever, it does mean always faithful. I have had more Marines do something for me in the last 10 years than I ever had before. If I go anywhere, if I have my hat on, the guys will stop and talk to me, you know, ask me when I was in, you know, and I tell them, oh, I was in 57 to 61. Oh, you're an old soul. And I go in stores, you know, that they say, oh, would you like a veteran's discount? You know, and yeah, sure. But I was in Florida, got lost in Tampa, and driving around, and I pulled into this ritzy hotel, and there was a strapping young black guy there. And he come running over. He said, "What can I do for you, Marine?" I said, "Oh, I'm lost. I, you know, no problem." He took me out, showed me how to get back on the highway, where to go, he said, "You know, you're part of the Brotherhood." He said, "You know, that's it." You know, I said, "Oh." So, I mean, I've always gotten that kind of treatment from guys, you know, that were in the service, always. Yeah. So that proves to be Semper Fidelis. You're always faithful.
Look after one another.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I met Lowe's the other day, and I had my tank top on, and this guy, I'm in line, it's in the garden center, so there's a bunch of people behind me, and I I'm checked out and I'm heading out the door. A guy goes, "Hey, what is that? That tattoo? What is that? What does that say?" Because it's in Latin around my globe and anchor. It says, "No better friend, no worse enemy." I think that General Mattis coined that in Iraq or something like that. I could be wrong, but I like that inscription, so I put it around there. And this guy's like, "I took a little bit of Latin. Does that say no better friend, no better lover?" I said, "No." I said, "No better friend, no worse enemy, but no better lover as well." You know. So yeah, you see folks out there, they see your, you know, see a hat or a shirt or a tattoo, and people, regardless of the branch, you know, like Marines, we're particularly proud. And I, you know, that was in 30 years ago, but it really never ceases to surprise me how proud Marines are and how, congenial they are, how we stick together, and you know, when somebody says, "Oh, you're a Marine," you know, it's like it means something, you know, it really does. And so, but you know, regardless of the branch, I always honor our brothers and sisters who serve. It's a very, very special thing.
Yeah, like I said, I accidentally got into the Marines, but later on I learned to love it and I like it. I mean, and I wouldn't trade that experience for anything. I talked about going to the brig for being late. My wife today complains, "I would rather be 20 minutes early for something than to be 2 minutes late."
Yeah, that's one of the
things. I learned that lesson.
Yeah. That's one of the things that I'd like to have, regardless of blatantly disregarding it earlier.
Yeah.
It's like, that's one of the things that I wanted to discuss with you is like, what kind of core values, other than the Semper Fi and the cohesiveness and all that stuff, what lessons persist? You know, there's a way that we operate. As a Marine, you know, you have these core values that you had to abide by and were driven into your, you know, every fiber of your being when you served. And then when you get out in the civilian sector, you tend to still carry those attributes and those lessons. So other than punctuality, what do you feel, what kind of lessons do you take? Did you transfer into the rest of your life, your civilian life?
Well, it's not very evident today, but clothing, dressing up, always having respect for yourself and having respect for people around you and try to be neat, tidy, clean. You know, all those things, they are core values. I mean, it's something maybe everybody should do, but I think it's instilled in you because, you know, you wind up starting off in basic training, doing your own laundry, hanging your skivvies up and, you know, and all that stuff. I don't know if it was true when you were there, but we used to, once a week, we used to have to go out, no matter how cold it was or how, whatever, and we had a wash sink outside, and we would scrub our drawers out there and wring them out and then hang them up. And the underwear, the shorts, always had these two strings on them, so you could tie it around a clothesline. And then you went out 4 or 5 hours later when they were frozen solid, and then you try to bring them in the barracks and let them thaw out a little bit. But cleanliness, you got up every day, you got showered, you shave, and I mean, even now, you know, I don't have to go anywhere. I get up and I get dressed, I get showered. I mean, there are things that live with you. You learn them. And like I said, I'd rather be 20 minutes early than 2 minutes late. And that drives my wife crazy. But
yeah, you showed up 24 hours early for this podcast. Joe showed up yesterday. He's a motivator. I appreciate you're doing this. Your time is very valuable. And I really wanted to have a good conversation with you, Joe. So let's close it out, my brother, by talking about this this cover, this hat. I pulled it. I have it in my dashboard. Been driving around with it. I'm a big hat guy, and this has got an Eagle, Globe, and Anchor in scarlet and gold on the front, and then we've got the American flag on the side, and it says U.S. Marines, and it's got a little, some sort of little emblem sticker there. I don't know if I should take that off or not, but I don't know if I can keep it there. That's also an EGA. And then Joe's got his U.S. Marines friggin' cover, veteran, proudly served, so that's highly motivating. What's the origin of this hat?
Well, I live in a community where we have a bunch of servicemen living there, and I run a veterans organization, and I got a call from this guy that said that he needed a ride to the hospital, to the doctor's office, which was at the hospital about 15 miles away, and none of the carriers went that far or whatever. He said he had to go there a couple times because he had to go to get tests. Then he had to go back to get the results a couple of days later. Then he had to go back and get treatment. So I got him involved with one of our other guys to transport him to the hospital whenever he needed it. So he did, and that was fine. And he came to our meetings. We have a once a month meeting, and he came to those meetings. And then one day I got a call from his wife that he had passed. And so she said, he has some Marine Corps memorabilia if you would like it. And I said, absolutely. So here he had a collection of these hats, caps, covers. She said, if you would like them, fine. If not, so I did take them, and you have the one, and I have one, and I got I think one or two more at home of his, Dick Petrillo, Richard Petrillo. Yeah. And everybody called him Dick. So yeah, that was something, and I always get compliments on my hat. I mean, always get compliments. Yeah, and I got to be honest. If I want to get some sympathy or recognition or take advantage of, I put this hat on. I get more than I wear a camouflage hat. Sometimes I wear our veterans organization hat sometimes, and I wear what I just got from the Heroes Walk, their hat, sometimes. And but I don't get as much compliments or take advantage of as much as this one. So I mean, it's a favorite, I guess. Yeah.
Yes. Mm. Well, it's an honor to serve, and it's in I'm glad that people still recognize that,
yeah.
I think I shared with you that my son got in the mail a couple months ago a solicitation from Marine Corps recruiting, and it said to Samuel Oberst, stand up, do right, all those slogans
yeah.
that the Marine Corps is so famous for, be a hero, and it said of your hometown. And I at first shit canned it, man. I threw it out. I would love to see him join the Corps on some level, or both of my kids have the similar experience, because it's so powerful, for guys like you and I who have been through it, that it's something that you can have forever. It gives you that feeling of having been part of something. And so I'm glad that there's enough of people serving, enough Americans serving out there to congratulate and to thank for their service, regardless of what it was, whether they were a Medal of Honor recipient, or they were on the supply side, or putting rounds down range, or doing whatever, flying, there's miscellaneous job titles and types of ways to serve. But
yeah, whenever anybody says to me, thank you for your service, I always tell them, I say, it was my honor to serve. It was
an honor. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's yeah, same thing. Yeah, you come and checking out at Lowe's or whatever, they always get that 10% discount. Yeah. They're like, thank you for your service. I know that's probably a scripted line. Yeah. Some of them are more enthusiastic than others. Yeah. But they always say, oh, it was an honor. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because it's kind
I just tell them it was my honor to serve.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a very special thing. So awesome, man. Semper Fidelis, what kind of closing remarks we got, Joe? Let me just pay you a compliment. I met you through your wife, my friend, patient Nancy. Take care of you as well, Joe. And to know you guys is to love you. You're awesome people. And I found out you're a Marine. Man, we just have endless opportunities to have conversations about the old Corps, about the new Corps, about current events and life in general. It is an absolute honor to have a conversation with you. And I think that my audience, which is comprised significantly of Marines and those who serve, will really appreciate what you've had to say. So thank you very much. You have any other conversation pieces there? I got something here for you. That
ammo box.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
30 caliber ammo can. I had one of my patients put a little scene on it, painted a tug of war that we were doing there. Yeah. And but it's pretty stinking neat. I think that the artist was a Marine as well.
So, yeah, I have two of them, I think, at home. I had more than that, but I gave them away, used it. I have one. I use all my electrical equipment in there. And another one I have for other special tools. I keep them around.
Yeah, yeah. It's a nice little memento.
And I had that that doll, the sergeant, the DI that I forget his name.
You press on it?
Yeah, yeah.
And it would say what?
Yeah, all kinds. It had 13 different sayings, yeah. And they were all true Marine Corps sayings.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
I had one. I don't know if it was one I might have given you. I had a patient come in with one years ago. It was called Captain Carbohydrate. And he looked like a drill sergeant or a drill instructor. And he'd press his hand and he would say, bread, potatoes, pasta, and wine. Fill your belly like a swine. If you're hungry and want to eat, salad and meat make a tasty treat. Yeah, man. All right, brother. Well, Semper Fidelis, I appreciate you. It's an honor to have a conversation.
Thank you for inviting me.
You got it, man. You're the friggin' best. Let's try again, that baby.